You start on day one and your cash flow is challenged. Everything is just really slow.
One thing we don't want people to do is panic.
I was always told by a developer that property in the UK in particular is like a bunch of rabbits.
We've seen interest rates start to stabilise, potentially coming down in the middle of the year. What could damage that?
So if enough people believe it, they won't do anything. And if they don't do anything, that will harm recovery.
Getting it right on day one is key.
Welcome to the Business Magazine Property Podcast in partnership with MSP Capital. This will bring you fresh perspectives from key figures in the property industry in the south of England. I will explore the challenges, but more importantly, the opportunities that are present within the market. Today we are joined by Lee Merrifield of MSP Capital, Nicola King of Wellington King Chartered Surveyors, and David Fanchi of Lesser Aldridge Solicitors. I'll start with yourself, Lee. Just give me a bit of background about your expertise.
Prior to joining MSP Capital, I worked for NatWest for 27 years, undertaking sort of real estate finance with them, and then came across to MSP about 6 years ago. So, yeah, a lot of banking property background sort of that underpins what we do here at MSP.
I'm David Fanchi, and I've been in practice for 23 years. I'm in the general real estate market with bias towards commercial and landlord and tenant real estate finance. And I've been at Lesser Aldridge for just over a year.
I'm Nicola King, a chartered surveyor. I set up Wellington King Chartered Surveyors in 2015, predominantly managing surveying, contract administration, project management.
Today we're looking to challenge negativity in the market by discussing how to navigate a slowing property market. The first question when you approach a topic like this is, look at where we're at. What does the picture look like across the property market from all your perspectives?
Interest rates look like they're going to start to come down as the year progresses. Inflation rate is falling, albeit there was a bit of a blip this month, but the general direction of travel is lower. So, you know, I think there are grounds for optimism. You know, we're dealing with developers that are still dealing with kind of prices from 2022 that they've got to work their way through. So the first part of the year will perhaps have some challenges, but we also see that there are grounds for optimism as markets settle down and rates start to fall.
Yeah, I agree with Lee. I think there's some reasons for optimism. I think people are looking for everything to steady so that we can all kind of move forward and with productivity increasing. The agents that I've spoken to, certainly since January, seem to be reporting a strong start to the year. So as Lee says, with the interest rates hopefully reducing, we're all looking forward to hopefully picking up as the year progresses.
What about yourself, David? Where are the risks?
What I'm seeing in the market generally is residential property is perhaps more challenging, so more risky. Commercial seems to be holding up, but it really depends which sector of commercial you're talking about. So big warehouses, distribution centres, those sorts of things, especially with good connections, I'm sure you'll agree that they're quite in demand for the moment. Retail market is very difficult, and especially with a lot of the legislative changes coming in.
We're seeing interest rates start to stabilise, potentially coming down in the middle of the year. What could damage that recovery in interest rates? Or where are the risks? We've obviously got a huge amount of elections taking place all across the world, macroeconomic factors. What keeps you up at night?
I think the main risk is the unknown. People sitting on their hands, people that are told there might be a recession. It's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. So if enough people believe it, they won't do anything. And if they don't do anything, that will harm recovery.
Yeah, I mean, markets are challenging at the moment, as we've said, and it doesn't take a lot to knock it off course. And, you know, you worry about geopolitical stuff that's happening out there in the world. You know, Ukraine is still rumbling on issues there. We've now got the Israel situation. It doesn't take a lot to make people nervous that has then a knock-on effect to sort of what we're doing in this country. In theory, property should be a million miles removed from what's happening in Israel, but it's not, because everything is kind of interconnected and markets get jittery in the current climate.
Yeah, I was always told by a developer that property in the UK in particular is like a bunch of rabbits crawling over under a hedge. It doesn't actually take much of a bang or whatever to spook them and they'll run away again. So, and they'd wait and see, and then gradually they'll reemerge. So
perhaps there's some truth in that. There's a good point you made there about being in danger of talking ourselves into a property downturn. Is that something you would agree with, Nicola?
Yeah, I do. I think that's a really good analogy with the rabbits in the hedge. As soon as any small variation or change happens, you know, the media jump onto it, everyone's onto it, and that really spooks the market. So we really need that stability to prevent that reaction.
At the end of the day, statistics are produced that says it is or it isn't in recession. But in reality, it's how people feel rather than what the statistics are saying. And as David says, we're great at talking ourselves into a recession. And inevitably, the recession then is then backed up by the stats because we've kind of talked ourselves into it in the first place.
When we enter a downturn in the property market,
there's a lot of people with buildings that they can't sell or rent, not a very nice position to be in. So what advice do you give clients to release equity so they can get out of that situation and free them up to develop other properties?
One of the products that we offer is what's commonly known as a development exit product, where, you know, we can gear up against completed stock and provide someone with equity that gives them that sort of cash flow that they need to carry on with their next project whilst they're waiting for sales. There's no silver bullet as such, but there are ways we can help and assist. And, you know, as I say, we're in the business of lending money to good people, and the market might be more sticky, but that doesn't mean that they've built a bad product in the wrong location. It just means that the market is more challenging and they need a little bit more time. And a supportive lender is one that recognises that and is able to make those adjustments and help the borrower through that process.
David and Nicole, what advice do you give to clients who have a property that they're stuck in?
Initially, I would say you need to understand the reason why it's not shifting as you anticipated before. And if that's because, for example, of a planning restriction that says you can only use it for particular use, speak to local authority. See if they value it being disposed of, being let above retaining that restriction.
I think touching on what both Lee and David said, just have those conversations. So talk to people, kind of get advice from as many people as you can, and talk through different situations, different scenarios, so that you can make an informed decision. So whether it's the local authority or the lender, or, you know, anyone that you can speak to get some advice, and then have a think about it, take it on board and move forward with your decision.
Are developers good at talking to one another to find solutions?
I think the better developers talk to lenders, talk to IMSs, talk to solicitors, talk to local authorities, you do find an increasing proportion actually that bury their head in the sand and think, you know what, I'm not going to take that phone call. It will be all right. It will come good. I just want a few more months. But unless you're talking to various professionals, then it might be taken out of your hands.
It can be a lonely place being a property developer. If you're a one-man band, you've got to have a network of people, sources of information that you can go to that keep you up to date with things so that you're not feeling quite so alone, because the chances are there are other people in that kind of predicament as well. It's having that reliable professional network and people that you can go to that will give that advice. And it may not be always what you want to hear, but it will be the advice in the current sort of status of things as they are.
How do you build your network?
Personally, I would suggest that you actually deal with a fewer number of people rather than try and spread your net too thinly.
I've been doing this for sort of 30 years, so I've built up a, you know, big network of professionals and people that I speak to. But yeah, if you're a property developer, it's having go-to people, as David says, really is probably what you need to have. You know, if they're borrowing money, they will actually already have a range of professionals that they're using. Probably what they've got to do is tap into them a bit more. You know, I'm not just a lender. I can provide, you know, some advice. You know, Nicola is not just a surveyor. She can provide advice. You know, we're not just a source of funds and a means of getting access to those funds. You know, the solicitors can provide advice. You know, they're dealing with loads of different transactions. That's three people they're already dealing with, without having to expand their network that they can access if they want to talk.
So we touched on developers being stuck with a property, but one of the key ways that can be avoided is by finding the right buyer for a development.
A lot of the time, developers spend a lot of time sourcing the funding, getting the funding, getting everything lined up, getting the values done, getting the build costs signed off. And those are obviously very, very important parts of the process, but they're only kind of stage one. And I think it's almost like they relax at that point. Whereas actually, you know, you've got to have a marketing strategy. You know, who is my target audience? I'm building these flats in, let's say, Winchester. Who am I appealing to? You know, have I spoken to the agents to make sure that what I'm building and the size of units that I'm building and the specification is fit for the market? And I think that's where people need to spend a little bit more time, is understanding what their market is and then having a coherent sort of marketing strategy that backs that up, and you know, and using advertising boards and brochures and websites, you know, are all part of that. It's not everybody's thing, and not everybody needs to do that. But those are powerful tools that are available to people if they want to use that, and can help that process of, I suppose, elevating your property above everybody else's or everything else that's out there in the market at the time.
David and Nicola, do you find that is a problem with clients that you deal with, that they don't necessarily grasp what the end user wants or who their buyer is? Or do you find that they're quite savvy to this?
Again, some and some. A lot of people do tend to focus on the acquisition and then think, right, I've secured the land, now what do I do with it? As opposed to thinking location, 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 secure it in the right place for the right target audience.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I would also add just to when you're thinking about the buyer and you've taking on all the advice from the agents, etc., just making sure you have those budgets in place. So, you know, isn't it great to get started on site and you've got enough to build it, and that's wonderful. But having the right budget in place for the right finisher specification. So for example, if you've got a £2 million house, you know, you can't spend 10 grand on a kitchen. You've got to have the sufficient allowances in there. Does the agent think you need a show home? Do you think you need a show home? Just making sure you've got all the allowances in there for a real good finisher specification, or at least the level that you need to be able to sell that to your target audience, and then anything associated with that, such as your show home and any marketing, etc.
I'd like to turn to finance. Keen to know a wee about how developers can navigate this tough market, and your why your role as a lender is key, but also just keen to dig into about what specifically you look for when a developer comes to you.
We're looking for, you know, a sensible scheme in a sensible location that is within someone's capabilities. And I know that sounds obvious, but it probably is that obvious. We will lend to people potentially with limited track record or no track record. And then we make sure that they are surrounded by good professionals, you know, the likes of David and Nicola, you know, performing their role as part of that. So we'll potentially do that. But, you know, we wouldn't want to teach a building, you know, a tower block in London of 70 units whilst being a teacher. That kind of wouldn't work. So you've got to have the right kind of scheme that fits that person, preferably some experience and understanding of what they're doing. And where there are shortcomings, it's about surrounding themselves with the right professional advice and the right people around them so that we can gain comfort as a lender. Because we can make the numbers work on a piece of paper. That's relatively easy. But it's actually the non-financials and all the bits and pieces that go with that that actually give a lender the comfort that project is deliverable, because they've, you know, they're going to be able to sort out this and this point. And, you know, that's often the failing that people have, is that they say, well, I've got, you know, a tranche of money. You know, the numbers work. You can lend me this, can't you? And the answer probably is yes. But there's all these non-financial bits that need to form part of the jigsaw to make sure that actually it's a robust deal. And that's as much for our benefit, obviously, as a lender, to make sure that our money is safe and secure. But actually, it's as much for their benefit as well, to make sure that they're not starting a journey that they can't finish.
What are the common pitfalls? How do people get into trouble when they're going through a development?
To be honest, in the current climate, and over the last 2 or 3 years, a little bit longer than that, its build costs have been the Achilles heel of the majority of developers. There are too many people that believe that they can build relatively cheap still, and maybe haven't done recently, and have just not kind of kept up with cost inflation that has really kicked in over the last 3 or 4 years post-COVID. And yeah, we see an awful lot of deals that people are self-procuring because they believe they can save money that way. But actually, when you stress test the numbers, and that is Nicola's role for us, will be to go out and stress test those numbers, they just don't really stand up to scrutiny. They're too cheap. And they're almost kind of bending the numbers to kind of fit the transaction, which is always a telltale sign. You know, they need to be robust, fit for purpose, a decent contingency. And as Nicola said earlier, that reflect the kind of specification that you're trying to deliver. As she rightly says, if you're building a £2 million house, it's not going to have a £5 grand kitchen in it. It's going to have something more substantial. And that's the key, is making sure that you've thought that through and that you've costed it based on current costings, or taken advice along those lines from someone like Nicola.
Good question to follow up, Nicola. What are the common situations you see where it can go a bit wrong?
I think, as Lee said, trying to make the build cost fit the scheme. So, you know, you've got your development appraisal and you've got X amount in for build costs. Those build costs have to be achievable. If you've only got £100 a square foot, that's not going to be achievable for the vast majority of schemes. So kind of going, well, you know, I'll just make it work. It's not the environment at the moment to be just trying to make anything work. Everything's fluctuating. Inflation is still strong. It's also quite unpredictable. So the cost of some building materials are coming down. Some labour elements are coming down. Others are still skyrocketing, and also availability can be a bit hit and miss. So trying to make your build costs fit the appraisal is really one of the biggest pitfalls, I would say, that we come across.
I think lenders do value experience a lot of the time, and is it achievable? But the actual demographic seems to be the same, and I don't sense a material change in the type of development.
I think what we've seen in 2023, a more inexperienced developer has perhaps parked it for the time being, but obviously we also deal with a number of experienced developers. That is what they do. You know, they build houses, therefore taking account of different market conditions, and it is part of what they do. They'll probably ramp up when things are good, and they'll probably scale back a little bit when times are tough, but fundamentally they build houses, and therefore they will find a way of navigating that process. They'll probably be more active when some of them less experienced people are taking a bit more of a back seat. But generally speaking, the profile is much the same.
We discussed before we started about how developers are a risky profession. A lot of them put money on the line. How do you find the challenge of building relationships and keeping those relationships strong with developers or indeed, you know, people you work with within the property industry? Say, David?
We've not really had an issue with that because I think at the bottom end of the market, people tend to be more price sensitive and we wouldn't really get involved. Our client base tends to value experience and advice over pure cost and get the lowest common denominator. And that way they tend to avoid the risk.
A question for yourself, Nicola. So who's getting it right? What developers are continually producing results? If you don't want to name names, you could pick sectors. Who's performing well?
I think it's the developers that have actually road tested their build costs. So developers that use their mistakes or their cost increases on a previous project to say, okay, well, we can't actually build for that anymore. And those that are accepting that it's an incredibly difficult time, it's an expensive time, it's an unpredictable time to be building, you have to price that in for your build cost. Those that are saying, oh, you know what, you know, I'll just make it happen, they're the ones that are really tripping up. Whereas those that will take on the advice of their professionals, or if we go back to them and say, look, I'm really struggling to meet your numbers, that will take that on board and say, okay, actually, you're right. You know, inflation is a difficult time. We need to increase those build costs and really allowing for the unpredictability of the current market.
Yeah, I think picking up on what Nicola was saying, I think the developers doing well are the ones that understand their market, know what they're doing, been doing it for a little while. They may even have a brand. I mean, we're dealing with a developer local to our office here in Poole who builds high-end units, and he spends as much time on the marketing and preparation as he does actually building it, because he's trying to build a brand and he's trying to get people to understand what it is he's doing, so that actually the building process is the final part of that process, not the beginning of the process. And I think not everybody's going to be able to do that, and not everybody's building high end. But as Nicola says, it's kind of understanding your market and making sure you've just got to have that bit more attention to detail when the market is more challenging, because you've just got to work a little bit harder. Because if you start it wrong, it's going to take a long time to unwind, because you're probably not going to be seeing your money back for 18 months, 2 years if you're doing development. So you kind of need to make sure you get it right on day one to protect your investment to get it back at the end, which is ultimately what it's all about.
How common is that?
It's really common. So it's split between two, the ones that kind of start with a reasonable budget and then unpredictable things happen, like the inflation that we've experienced over the last kind of 12 to 18 months. That was relatively unpredictable. COVID was obviously quite unpredictable. These things that hit developers, that they've started well, they've got on okay, and then something happens and it's a real challenge from there. Then you've got the other developers who just start with too low a budget. It's then a real struggle from day one. So you're getting behind on your payments from the very beginning, or you're really struggling. You're having to fight your cash flow from day one. And cash flow is really key. It just slows everything down. So if you start on day one and your cash flow is challenged, everything is just really slow. Your interest costs are obviously racking because you're taking longer than you had intended to take. And really, that's when you just see that the site just grinds to a halt where nothing can be paid for. And eventually then, you know, your developer's crying out for help because they've really come proper on the build costs.
Obviously, our job as a lender is to try and make sure that doesn't happen by, you know, doing our due diligence at the outset to make sure that the costings are robust, which is why we engage with Nicola at Wellington King. The borrower may not want to, but we want them to, and we want to, because for us, you know, I know it's a corny kind of sort of property cliche, but getting those foundations right is key. Getting it right on day one is key. Yes, we can't do anything about COVID. Yes, we can't do anything about wars that push inflation up. But actually, if you've done everything possible at the outset to make sure that those kind of pitfalls are avoided, then you've got that bit much more, you know, chance of success. And that's really one of the primary jobs of a lender, is to position it correctly and make sure that the borrower has thought about all these things as best as possible before they kick off on the development.
Without wishing to be too political about that, whichever flavour government we're going to have, there's going to be a green agenda, and that's only going to get more and more common and more in demand. So I think developers who actually spec property to comply with regulations or advice from the Environment Agency will actually sell their units a lot quicker.
Which leads on to the next question, David. Which is, what's the worst thing a developer could do in this current market?
Is bury your head in the sand, not talk to people. You need to engage with your professionals at every stage, and in particular when things go wrong.
One thing we don't want people to do is panic. That can obviously lead to rash decisions and poor decision making. So you've got to keep a cool head as part of the process and assess things fully before making decisions. What you don't want to do as well is kind of overcorrect. Sometimes what we see is people starting to sort of cut back on budgets. They then compromise the finish of their property by not putting the right specification of things in. And of course, that has a detrimental effect, really, because you might save a few quid here and there, but actually you've delivered a product that's not quite what you wanted and potentially not quite what the market wants. And then, of course, you then give yourself a sales problem. So it's those kind of things that people just need to guard against. You know, cool heads are key. And then it's easy to say, you know, I'm not the one borrowing the money, but that is key. You've got to make rational decisions in a timely manner.
Cash flow is really the number one issue that we see on sites. So making sure that you've got that all lined up is really key. And then I think trying to bury your head in the sand, as David said, is probably then the worst thing you can do. Once you realise there's an issue, you've got to be open. You've got to talk to your professionals, your funder. As IMSs, we're here to help. We like schemes to be successful. It's obviously better for everyone if we've got a nice, easy scheme from start to finish. So just being really open with everyone and getting everyone's ideas and being honest with everyone.
Looking ahead to this time next year, where do we think we'll be? What will the market look like?
I think there'll be a bit more certainty. At the moment, it doesn't take much to spook people. So we should have a bit more general acceptance of the market conditions at the time. There will be legislative requirements. The Levelling Up and Regeneration Act has just come in. That's going to potentially allow local authorities to let out against the will of the landlord particular high street properties, retail properties. So I think we might generally see a move away from developers building retail because there's inherent risk that purchasers aren't always going to be that keen to buy something that a local authority can then insist is dealt with in a relatively short period of time.
We've all got a lot to learn in 12 months with the election. Everyone's talking about kind of planning changes, planning improvements, fingers crossed, and we can speed that process up. It's quite an unknown period, potentially with an election coming up, with inflation as it is, interest rates. So hopefully in the next 12 months, we can just find a bit of stabilisation, a bit more confidence, and we'll move on from there.
Hit the nail on the head. You know, an election year always makes it a little more difficult to predict because we're not quite sure. Well, we may have an opinion as to who's going to be in power, but we, you know, we can't be certain until that's happened. And we're not certain when that's going to be at the moment. But certainly by this time next year, I think it has to have taken place. I don't really see prices doing much this year, so I think, you know, we are where we are from a pricing perspective in terms of property values. But as we've sort of touched on earlier in the conversation, we would hope that interest rates and inflation start to continue to fall. That will then improve liquidity in the market. Improved liquidity then drives more transactions, which is ultimately what property people and property developers want. They want transactions. Yeah, price rises are lovely, of course they are, because they enhance profits, but actually what people want is activity and deals happening in the market and liquidity in the market that means that when they build something, they can sell it and start that whole process again.
So there's a property podcast which is aimed at people who work in the property sector. One question that we're always keen to ask guests is what they really enjoy about the job and what drives them forward and makes them go out of bed each morning.
I think it's just so varied. So every day you come across something different. You're always giving advice to people, trying to help people. People trust you, they rely on you. It's a nice position to be in that you can really help people.
Helping people is the key driver. It's especially gratifying when people actually listen to your advice and accept they don't know everything. And the reason that you employ professionals is because they are specialists in the area. You might be very good at laying bricks, but you might not know about the detail of a surveyor. If you can impart some wisdom in the area you know, then that's very gratifying.
Yeah, like the other two, I like helping people. I like seeing projects come to fruition. You know, obviously, I'm just a lender sat in an office, but there's nothing better than going out to site and seeing the finished project and being able to have a look around the completed, you know, properties and seeing them sold. And it's nice to be able to then drive past them one day in the future and go, I help deliver that. So, you know, I enjoy property. I like property. So it's just great to be able to play a part in that process, really.
I'd like to thank all three of you for taking part today and the issues that are around that. We've covered a huge spectrum of issues from sustainability to the importance of taking advice and to lending criteria and the importance of relationships. I think it's something that'll be really valuable to the audience. Please do give us feedback on the podcast. We're in our second episode, so tell us what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, what you would like to hear from. And thanks for joining us.